Exciting day in Harrisburg. We're here just after the governor delivered his budget address. It was a little over an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. What were your initial thoughts?
You know, it started off, and as I said during my floor comments, I try to have an open mind, appreciating that hopefully the governor will present a more realistic budget this time, and I hope that he would be more in line with our expected revenues. So as I listened, I heard some good things about supporting our first responders, so supporting law enforcement, keeping our communities safe, you know, growing our workforce, career and tech ed. And then the speech just took a turn, and I heard a lot of partisan politics, which to me was very disappointing because I know during last year's budget process, although we did go into November to finally pass the budget, we, I think, broke some new ground in how we approached the budget negotiations. All four of our caucuses, House Democrats, Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans, House Republicans, you know, we sat down in a room and we worked together, we negotiated, we found common ground, and I'd hoped that that would be a building block for this year's upcoming budget. But unfortunately, I think the governor's tone yesterday really made that a difficult challenge to overcome.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, how he started, like you said, he started out so bipartisan and it almost seemed like he had learned his lesson a little bit.
Right.
But then he kind of veered off back into that, you know, almost like he couldn't help himself. He had to become that partisan again. And what got the budget done was getting all four caucuses of the legislature in the room together. And do you think that's really the way that we can land this budget on time this year?
Well, I think that's absolutely the way that it has to occur. Rather than posturing and holding press conferences and sending fake budgets back and forth, sit down and actually talk about the issues, talk about what's important to each of our caucuses, and then find some way to reach a consensus on those issues, find some way to craft a budget that doesn't excessively spend taxpayer dollars and hopefully move it forward before we reach that June 30th deadline.
So I see you have a book in front of you,
yes.
Pretty big. So that is what the governor's proposal looks like, right?
Yes. For the people watching and listening, this is the governor's budget. As you can see, there's a lot here. We received this on Friday. And so it's our job to try and break this down before the governor's budget address on Tuesday. So there's a lot of work that goes into basically dissecting this budget, trying to understand what's in there, the goods, the bads, and the uglies, if you will. And so that's the beginning part of the process. Now, we'll further take some time to look at this, and as we get into our appropriations budget hearings coming up here in February and March, we'll really dig into some of the proposals that the governor put forward, what the numbers are, what the real numbers are, where we are financially as a commonwealth.
Yeah, and I think it's important to show folks, and I'm just going to take this here. I mean, these aren't blank pages. These are pages with, you know, numbers and policy ideas, and it's a pretty big undertaking to get through that. And that's why it takes you 3 weeks to do budget hearings,
right?
Because you're talking to each agency about their little part of that book.
And I think that's a key part of the process. You know, we hear an hour and a half speech from the governor. He really doesn't talk about numbers other than, you know, the initiatives that he wants to spend taxpayer dollars on. But we don't dig into what's really in the budget, you know, the line by line items that fund the various departments and agencies, what those numbers stand for, why they're needed, and perhaps some cases why they're not needed, where the increases are, where the deductions are. That's a big part of the process. That's why, you know, we always say the caveat is that the governor's budget address is the start of the process. And then the budget hearings occur and will continue from a committee standpoint, from a legislative standpoint, from a caucus standpoint, to break this down further into what's really included in this budget.
And let's talk a little bit about the numbers then, kind of diving into this. So we have a chart that's on the screen right now showing that this is a $53.26 billion spend. So how does the governor balance that?
Well, I think that's the real scary part. You know, throughout this is the fourth budget that the Shapiro administration has introduced, and every year, without fail, they have spent beyond our revenues. And I was hopeful, again, as we went through the process last year, that we were able to bring that number down, that the governor might come in with a more realistic approach. And it is less than what he's proposed in previous years, but it is still at $53.26 billion at a time when we expect revenues to roughly be around $46.8 billion, a $6.4 billion gap. So where does that money come from? And that, I think, is really what should concern taxpayers, because the governor is proposing to introduce some new taxes, not new from issues that have been discussed in previous years, regulating and taxing skill games, legalizing and taxing recreational marijuana, increasing the minimum wage to $15, and then combined reporting. Those are the new taxes that the governor has proposed that, in his estimation, will generate roughly $1.8 billion. The other part of that, and I would back up a little bit, that when this governor took office, we had roughly a little bit more than $13 billion in surplus funds and rainy day funds.
Yep, and we'll have, show that chart right now. So we had $13 billion to start
right.
with. And if he gets his way, we're going to end up with just north of $3 billion
yes.
left.
Because this governor has increased his spending amounts far beyond our revenues every year that he has been in office. The surplus money is gone. Now, all that we have left, in the event that we have an emergency, the rainy day fund, our budget stabilization fund, is roughly about $7.6 billion right now. The governor is proposing to take $4.6 billion of that just to meet his spending amounts. That should concern every taxpayer in this Commonwealth, because that's the money that we have in case we do have a real emergency within this Commonwealth. And then if the governor takes that 4.6 this year, as he's proposing, that leaves 3 for next year. And then after that, there is nothing in the rainy day fund. So where does that money come from if the governor continues to create these false expectations on spending? Unfortunately, because of this excessive spending that this administration has put forth year after year, it's going to fall on the taxpayers of Pennsylvania. That is why we, as House Republicans and our colleagues in the Senate, have stood adamantly opposed to these spending increases, understanding that we have obligations that we have to meet, and we appreciate that. But when you spend above and beyond those obligations year after year, draining your surplus, draining your savings account, if you will, then you have nothing to fall back on. Where do you find that money? That's the challenge that we face.
Sure. And I think, too, as well, it's important to understand what you, like you said, there's a lot of mandated costs and costs that have to go right. up. So we're going to show the image of where all of this proposed spending is going.
Okay.
And you can see that pre-K and human services take up a lot of that budget. So
yes.
that's kind of interesting. And then you have higher education, state police and corrections. And then you have debt service, of course, and all other fits into a category that's just south of $4 billion. And that
yeah.
all other includes most of those three-letter agencies like DCED mm-hmm. and DEP and the Auditor General's Office and the Attorney General's Office and even the General Assembly, which is just a little segment, a little sliver of that piece.
Right.
So when you're thinking about the spending, the bulk of it really is between human services and between pre-K through 12 education.
Yeah, roughly, if you can see the chart, the big chunk is human services. More and more people are dependent on government services for healthcare. We provide a lot of services. And once you provide those services, we're on the hook to pay for those services. That's why in last year's budget, we had roughly a $1.9 billion obligation for Medicaid payments. This year, it's roughly about $1.3 billion. You couple that with the governor's ask to increase education funding to roughly about $884 million when you put all those different line items together, including the ready-to-learn block grants, K through 12 funding, and all that kind of stuff. And so you can see the governor is proposing a $2.72 billion increase from where we were last year. A lot of that is that. But then there's still the additional stuff that he's proposing. And if you heard the speech yesterday, even more money coming from the rainy day fund for this federal response fund. We don't know what that is. And so that, again, is something that we will have to explore. Now, the governor explained it briefly. But again, what is that? And why are we taking funds from our emergency account to fund this new program that we have no idea what it is? And then he also proposed $1 billion bond. I think people need to understand when you're taking out a bond, that means you're going to have to pay for that over time. And it's going to be a whole lot more than $1 billion. And that will fall on the taxpayers of Pennsylvania to pick up that. Now, we appreciate that there are housing concerns and issues that we have to address in this Commonwealth. But, you know, spending $1 billion in a bond is really taking out a loan that you're going to have to pay back later. And it's going to be a whole lot more than $1 billion. And you know, the other side of that that I think we have to talk about is if you drain the rainy day fund, all the credit rating agencies say that Pennsylvania has a good credit rating now because we've maintained our rainy day fund. So what happens if the governor drains that rainy day fund? The interest rate on that $1 billion bond is going to increase.
Go up. Yep.
And so I think taxpayers need to be cognizant of just what these proposals really entail.
Yeah, and a lot to unpack there in that. And one of the things I think is interesting, so on one hand, the governor is saying, I need to take $100 million from the rainy day fund in federal response because of what President Trump is or isn't doing.
Right.
But he forgot to mention that our human services costs are actually going to be cheaper by about $570 million because the federal government is increasing its share in our human services budget. So a little bit of a, maybe he just forgot.
Well, yeah, as I said earlier, there was a lot of political rhetoric in that speech, most of it unnecessary. And, you know, you're right. The federal government has increased that assistance to almost $500 million. I think that's probably why our obligation is less this year for Medicaid than it was last year. But we'll make sure that we highlight that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think interesting on the bond rating, that's so important because if the Commonwealth does need to take on debt, the better our bond rating, the better that interest is over time. But if we're talking about reducing that, reducing our credit rating, it's going to cost taxpayers more in the long run than a bond already would. And there's a lot of things that it makes sense to bond, like infrastructure projects and, you know, projects. And when I say infrastructure, I don't just mean roads and bridges, but, you know, sewer infrastructure and all the different things that we don't really think about that make our Commonwealth, our economy work. So the ramifications of that are huge. You know?
They are. And I think that's something that the residents of Pennsylvania need to be aware of. You know, we can't continue to kick the can down the road on spending. And we really have to draw the line. It would be much worse if we hadn't put our foot down 4 years ago. And, you know, we had hoped that the governor would perhaps have a more realistic approach. But again, he's presented a spending plan that is simply unsustainable for Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And when you look at what the governor has proposed versus what the legislature has been able to negotiate down, billions of dollars saved over the last 4 years. So that's really the reason why there is a balance in the rainy day fund. The reason why the surplus lasted as long as it did was because you stood up and said, no, we're not going to sign up for this spending plan.
Yes. And I think people need to take a look back before the administration, the Shapiro administration, even took office. He inherited a $13 billion surplus because when we had the majority in the House of Representatives working with our Senate colleagues, we put that money aside. We created that savings account. We put the money in the rainy day fund. We created the surplus. And Shapiro has virtually depleted it. It's almost less than a little bit more than half right now of what he had just 3 short years ago. And, you know, those trends are simply unsustainable and a burden eventually on the taxpayers of Pennsylvania. It's not his money. It's the taxpayers of Pennsylvania's money. And that's why we are so cognizant that we need to be responsible with those funds.
So we have budget hearings coming up. What are you most looking forward to for the 3 weeks that we're going to spend talking to these agencies about their proposals?
Well, we clearly have a lot to dig into. There was a lot put out there yesterday from the governor's new proposals. There's a lot of line items that see increases that we're going to have to question, some warranted, perhaps some not. And we'll have to dig deep into what all those things look like, what they look like from a policy perspective. I'd like to see some additional discussion, obviously, on energy production here in Pennsylvania. Data centers were a big talking point yesterday. And I know that's a concern somewhat in my opinion, unwarranted here in Pennsylvania. I think there's a lot of, I would say, unfactual news out there related to data centers. But people have seen their energy cost increase. And I think it's falsely attributed to data centers that we really don't even have here in Pennsylvania yet. And again, that was a talking point yesterday that the governor put out there on the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which just went away in November when we passed that budget last year. A big win for our Republican caucus, as well as regulatory reform and continuing the process to streamline permitting. We need to see more of that continue. I think that's going to be part of the discussion as we go through the budget hearings on what are we doing to make sure we continue to allow energy production to come back to Pennsylvania. I think the consumers need to realize, because of REGI, power plant shut down, baseload energy decreased at a time when demand was increasing. It's simply supply and demand. We do not have enough electricity right now to meet the current needs. And as we're going through these bitter cold temperatures this winter, you're seeing the impacts of REGI, introduced in 2019 unilaterally by Governor Wolf. Those impacts are what you're feeling right now, and that is why we were so adamantly opposed to REGI, and thank God we were able to get rid of it last year.
And I think it's important to note, too, that we're seeing some really great results from getting rid of REGI. Mm-hmm. Even in your district, there are coal-fired plants that were set to close, but they're looking to continue operations, and you recently supported some of those efforts. You just want to share a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Keystone Conemaugh, we have two coal-fired electric generation plants that are still in Armstrong and Indiana County in my district, in the region, and they were set to shut down basically because the federal regulations were still putting them out of commission. Now, that has changed, essentially because PJM consumers, electricity users realize we need that base load energy, and that's was going away. And so, thankfully, you know, they're trying to stay alive. They should be able to continue to exist, continue to generate that much needed base load energy. But it was a premature closure of a lot of these power plants that caused the situation that we're in right now. And thankfully, we still have those resources, and we need to make sure that they are able to survive.
Now, the bottom line is we need more energy production, not less. And when you take a energy producer like coal out of the picture,
right,
you're doing is you're increasing energy costs and you're decreasing your energy reliability, especially when it's cold out.
Yeah, I think what you've seen over the years is you've had unfair subsidies and mandates related to solar and wind that essentially made an unlevel playing field for the fossil fuel industry. And then when you have these cold days when there isn't much sunshine or perhaps there's no wind, you don't have enough electricity. And that is what we see happening. And that's why I think the industry and the grid managers and all that are realizing, oh, we need to pump the brakes on this because we need that baseload energy. Because when you flick that switch or turn up your heat, you want to see some results. You want to see the lights come on and you want to see your house be warm. And if we don't have that baseload energy, we're going to have some dire situations.
You know, at the end of the day, you need heat. So
you do.
If you don't want heat, or, you know, if you don't want your electric car to run, then don't support coal.
Well, and I think also people need to realize, as we have these discussions about affordability and cost at the grocery store and everything else being expensive, energy is the foundation of all that we do. Whether it's, you know, heating the grocery store or providing electricity for a hospital, for a school, you know, getting products to market or manufacturing, all that's based on energy. And if your energy costs are high, that's going to trickle down. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we have high electricity bills in our residential homes, that's the same as it is for manufacturers and all those people that provide those services and products that we need. So that's why you're seeing a lot of these costs increase. So the more we provide baseload energy, lower those energy costs, you'll see the cost of everything come down.
More affordable that energy is, the better everyone's going to do, you know, period.
Absolutely.
So, well, thanks for your time today. We'll be back in studio in just a couple weeks as we get the budget hearings rolling, and I'm sure there's going to be some interesting conversations had.
Absolutely.